You maniacs! You blew it up! Oh, damn you! God damn you all to hell!
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, people?
And when he says people, that means we have Steph back.
Hello! How are you guys?
Rose is in the house.
Today we are going to talk about Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Dun, dun, dun.
That was very good. That was very appropriate music for this.
You damn dirty apes! You blew it up!
Oh. Did you hear that in the movie?
Yeah, Tom Felton said it.
Yep.
But it was a human who said it instead of an ape. It was a nice little twist. Well, I'm going to start off with, I really like this. I didn't think I would like it because of the debacle of 2001 with Marky Mark.
Oh, you didn't like the Marky Mark version, huh?
Now, I'm not saying I don't like it, but it was a debacle in that nobody, you know, generally favors it. Yeah, so yeah. I didn't think it was horrible, but, you know, in general, that's not a well-liked film.
Yeah.
So, but this one, it's just hard to not like it. It had everything for me from, well, it didn't have, like, a lot of man flesh, but, you know, that's but, you know, there was lots of story there, so I was distracted by actual good story. I watched like the 1968 version and maybe 1972 or something, two of those before I went to go see it. So it was very much in the spirit of the
very movie. Good. Yeah. Very good. Yes.
Yeah. You recommended it. So I did. And very much in the spirit. I really loved it. I loved Caesar and the way he looked. I heard he was, I guess, animated by the same guy who did the Lord
Gollum.
Of Gollum, yeah.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Was that true? Do y'all know anything about that? Or I don't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
was
the
guy.
Curtis. And they did the motion capture stuff the same way.
It was motion capture. Okay.
So the apes were computer generated, and he did the acting, the virtual acting behind the scenes. So yeah.
They didn't look that computery.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? I was impressed. The computer graphic stuff is getting insane now, especially with organic forms. I can see robots, you know, they can do that, make them reflective and stuff. But when you got fur and flesh and movement like that, they're really getting out of control with this, with the tech.
It's kind of funny because before I saw this movie, I knew that chimpanzees can't move that quickly. So I was kind of like, well, that's cool. And then I thought, well, that would be an interesting side conversation for people who are fast zombies versus slow zombies fans.
Romero versus
fast primates versus slow. It's just the way that their hips are aligned. They can't walk upright for very long. And so they don't move that quickly. And they're, you know, designed to swing from trees, climb in trees. So, but I thought, well, cool. They're really booking it in this movie. So.
Well, they were genetically enhanced.
Yeah.
Yes, they were super intelligent apes. So they had been all rewired. I mean, you know, the walking upright, that was the point of discussion. Not the horseback riding or gun firing. That part was...
Yeah, that's just... Okay, so I said how I felt about it on general. How about you, Carl?
I love this movie. I really, really did. I was a true connoisseur of the original Planet of the Apes. Really, I liked the first three of the Planet of the Apes movies. And I liked them because of all of the, you know, the social stuff that they were saying at the time. It was revolutionary, the kind of stuff they were sliding under the radar in 1968. You know, and it was really, really brilliant. So, you know, when Marky Mark came back and when this one came out, I was not expecting a lot of the social commentary that we got from the first ones, which, in my opinion, is what made them so great. So I was kind of going, all right, what are they going to shovel at us this time? But the story was just, it was simple, it was clean, it was interesting. There were no real holes in it. You know, you can nitpick at a lot of little things, but they did a wonderful job of connecting it, you know, making it an actual prequel to the movie. They, you know, there were just little things that they tied in that connected it perfectly with the 1968 movie. So it was, I really liked it. I mean, again, it was a simple story. It wasn't as socially relevant and as layered as the original one was, or as the original few were. But the story, just to have action and, you know, good science gone wrong and the potential moral issues of genetic engineering that came up, that was good enough. And it made for a really interesting story. I liked it.
Cool. Steph?
So I'm with Carl and you on this. I thought it was a really entertaining movie. I did pick up a lot on the social commentary bit, and I think that they kind of maneuvered that pretty deftly throughout. It wasn't too preachy where, I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but I really didn't like Avatar that much because I just thought I was being preached to. So, anyway, I really liked this one. I liked the setting in general because science fiction has a lot of freedom and they can explore these kinds of themes, but sort of once removed in a different setting. So they have that freedom to explore these sort of social commentaries. Whereas, you know, if you had a nonfiction movie, you may not have the kind of devices that you need to really to get that home. I liked that they kind of changed, they updated the reason for these apes becoming so wonderful and great. They updated it with a virus, which already that kind of had me hooked because I'm a huge fan of pandemics and mass global extinction. And
so you're going to see Contagion, aren't you?
That is next.
Yeah, I guess you guys can pretty much pinpoint what I'm gonna like in a movie now, especially since my favorite part of this Rot Pata movie was that the credits hinted at this great pandemic. So I was like, yes, I can't wait to see all these people dying in the next movie.
You know, you're sick.
Kruger is hardcore. Don't mess with the Kruger.
I know, right?
We've established that I am an evil person without us, so let's move on. No, but yeah, I thought there were lots of comedic elements in the movie too, and again, that was deftly played. That poor neighbor who was sort of a jerk.
McKay
is out. From Stargate Atlantis.
Right, McKay.
The poor guy. I mean, he just took a kick in and kept on, what does that say? Licking and kept on ticking. Yeah, that guy. He was, at a point I was just going, man, you're going up against John Lithgow. Like, get over it.
You're
going to lose every time in the sympathy vote. So
Lithgow, he was so great. I mean, he wasn't all that, you know, over the top, funny or anything. He was just a regular actor doing a thing, and he made me cry. I cried a lot in this movie, not like, you know, full-on funeral tears or anything, but it was just I was misty the whole time, and I was just wiping my eyes because I don't know, for some reason these movies, Planet of the Apes, they always get to me because, you know, I don't like to hurt animals. I don't like people hurting animals or people being mistreated or anything being mistreated, even a robot or whatever. So it you know, kind of hurt to see that mistreatment, and it was kind of good to see Caesar and how he grew because he was so cute and how, you know, smart he got and how, you know, he planned when he was in the animal shelter or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And how he, you know, became the leader, and those other apes followed him and he freed them. And it, I don't know, it just, it spoke to me, not to sound overly dramatic, but it did. I loved it. And when he actually, speaking of speaking, when he spoke for the first time, I didn't expect that to happen in this movie.
Right. Yes. That was surprising that they jumped right ahead with that. I thought it was poignant. It was good when they revealed it. But I was surprised that they jumped right into that already in this one.
Yeah. Was the science weird where you have this leap in intelligence in the apes, but it doesn't work on humans? I mean, did that feel weird? Like, I accepted it. I didn't care. It's like, they're different, so maybe it'll work different.
I was just going to say, Carl, it's like you said earlier, they really made sure that there were very few plot holes in the movie, and that just really added to the credibility of the plot. You know, this affects humans differently, and, you know, let's proceed with caution, and of course to err as human, and they're not going to proceed with caution, so therefore you know, the entire human race is subject to this great mistake. And I felt that really hammered the social commentary home, but it also made for a really good storyline.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, if you're talking about the science, they did a double reinforcement early on when they talked about the science. They made it very clear. They said that, you know, chimps' immune system is slightly different than humans. That's totally scientifically valid.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, regarding the testing of the virus, you know, the genetically enhanced virus, that the reason that it worked on apes, not humans, is because the apes had a stronger immune system for, you know, for this particular
right.
type of thing. And so when you couple that with later on in the movie, a virus devastates, you know, the human race. I'm not sure. Was it clear that the virus related to the drug is what was responsible for the demise of humanity? Was that what happened? I wasn't sure.
I thought it was the lab tech guy. Yeah, he got out and he sneezed on Rodney McKay, and then that's when it started.
And that's what. Okay, so yeah, it was the same. It was the same virus then. That.
But ultimately, it was the drug that caused this.
Right.
Can we say that guy from... I love that guy. I don't remember his name, but he played in Invasion. Did you guys ever watch that series?
Yeah, I did. Which one? Which guy?
He was the brother-in-law from Invasion. The lab tech guy that started the whole demise of humankind as we know it in that mythology.
I didn't recognize him on sight. Wow.
I love that character. I was hoping actually that he would be funnier, because that's kind of what he does, or that's what he's known for. But instead, he just was the harbinger of death. But that's okay.
I would like to point out that, Stephanie, you are awesome because you watched Invasion. Not many people watched it.
That was one of my favorite sci-fi series of all time.
Yeah, it was with that trilogy of sci-fi on like CBS and NBC.
Like that 2005 all the stars aligned, and
it was a whole bunch of them out. And Invasion was one of them. I forgot the other two. Like
Threshold and Surface.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. And the problem is, to me, they kind of merged together. I think I watched like the first two of all of them, and I couldn't tell the difference after a while. But yeah, now I got you. That guy.
Yeah, they all got canceled, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Invasion was the only one that really held up. Threshold I liked when it was on, but then I went back and watched it just for Brent Spiner's sake, because Brent Spiner is sexy to me. And that was terrible. It was like CSI, but for sort of virus, and it was terrible. It was horrible. But Invasion stood up against the test of time.
Yeah, it kind of, but all of them kind of blew. But I mean, because they all got canceled. I didn't want any of them to get canceled, but then I kind of just like, whatever, I don't care. Whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Well, sorry.
I
digress.
Yeah. Well, I kind of brought us down the path, but because I'm like, you know, not many people paid attention to those three little shows. So, so yeah, I'm gonna finish the, because Carl, you say you like the first three of the Planet of the Apes movies. Weren't there like six or something?
Yeah, there were a ton of them. I can't even remember how many there were. And of course, there was a TV series as well.
Shut up.
Oh yeah. Whoa,
what? I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, come on, of course.
Oh my God, that was terrible. Oh, that was so bad. I had totally forgotten.
Was it bad? Like the 80s V bad?
No, it well.
It was like Battlestar Galactica television.
Battlestar Galactica 1980 bad.
That bad. Oh.
It was a little disappointing, yeah.
Sweet,
yeah.
Fancy craze balls. I mean, that was terrible.
Watch your language, young lady. I mean, come on. It's a podcast. I'm sorry, but was there a question in there?
No, there wasn't a question. I'm just wrapping up. Unless, you know, what else do we have to say about this movie? I mean, I loved it. Do you know that Charles on Twitter said that he liked, and I'm calling you out, Charles.
Uh-oh, here we
right
go.
Right now. Mm-hmm. He said that he liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes better than Captain America.
Well, of course, the man has sense. I mean, that is no major admission.
After
here.
All that, he put in the crazy voicemail. He tweeted us like he wanted to kill us.
Well, I will defend the insanity of Charles here and simply say that he was saying he was a fan of Captain America, but relative to other movies, you just say that it was the most epic adventure of the 21st century would be going a bit far. Yes, I think it is safe to say Planet of the Apes is better in many, many, many areas than Captain America. So, okay, send that fan mail already, the hate mail to me, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that.
Minister on.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
It was better. It was better. Yeah, so.
Okay. I'm going to leave it at that one. I don't want him to give me or send me terrible tweets, but
y'all ready to do that? Whatever. We love you, Charles. Killing boy. Okay.
So I think one last thing that I would add about this movie that made it more entertaining is they needed that plot device of wiping out humans as well as the apes, you know, gaining this super intelligence and then escaping. Because those apes that escaped to the redwoods, if the human race hadn't already been compromised as far as their numbers, then the apes would never have evolved to a point in the future where they're the top dog.
Darn so, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thoroughly loved that they had done that in the plot, and you know. When you think about what started this whole series, which was this campy 60s Charlton Heston movie, this one really has some real weight to it. You know, it's a standalone movie. It's good. It's not the best movie of all time, but I liked it better than the original. Please don't send me hate mail.
That is at Steph by Stereo.
I am going to let you slide on that. Now, while I do not entirely agree that I think this one's better than the original, I'll qualify why. And that's because when you think about when the original one came out in the 1960s, like I said, 68, I think, is when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
All of the social commentary that was inherent in the original one, I mean, this crazy idea about, you know, living in a world where, you know, some had civil rights and others didn't, and there was this oppression by the... There's this scene where Charlton Heston finally starts to realize what a predicament he is in, you know, and he launches into this classic, you know, almost Shatner-esque monologue where he's like, I don't understand. What is going on there? What's up is down. The society's all wrong. When a white guy dressed as an astronaut can't even get ahead, what's gone mad? It's just hilarious. But the fact that they got away with in the 60s, you know, just people were paying by the droves, but just, you know, $2 and $3 a pop to try to figure out, you know, what living in a world of inequality could be like, you know, and to relate to Charlton Heston, having Charlton Heston speaking about social injustice and the man come back. I mean, it was just genius, people, that they were able to get away with this stuff. So I always have a sentimental connection with the original one, because to be able, you know, like you said, Steph, you nailed exactly when you're talking about science fiction is at its best is sort of like a reflection of our society, or it tells stories of our present society in a way that's candy coated, or it's hidden in just a little, just enough where, you know, you can look at it with fresh eyes, and then it makes you kind of look back on what's going on right now. And for the original one, like I said, 1968, for the to be able to get away with that kind of stuff in the 60s, I don't care if the masks were kind of rubbery, but again, to create a believable world. You know, really good science fiction can do that. And even with, like I said, you know, with rubber masks and they're out in the desert and everything, just being able to create a believable alternate reality like that with the tech that they have. And, oh, and one other minor issue that these days no one seems to care that much about is look at the quality of the actors. Even in the original 1968, you had Roddy McDowall, you had Charlton Heston in there. You had these really heavy hitting, you know, good actors that were trying to get across these concepts and these ideas, and all of that came through underneath the rubber masks. So that is why I give it so much credit, you know, to do all of that with a meager budget. And well, then again, back then it was a pretty big budget. It was like, I think they made it for like $6 million, which was radical. That's crazy cash in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to do that back then was great. So I always, you know, sort of temper films with the context, the social context, the era that it came from, and that ending. I'm pretty sure. No, come on now. I mean, that's
iconic.
Nothing has been able to touch that kind of stuff. And I'm sure. Does anybody know? Is Rod Serling involved? Was he involved with it? Because something felt an awful lot like
Twilight, you know, Zone-y.
Yeah, like Twilight Zone. I can't
it did,
remember.
I don't know.
The point, you know, come on. You know, we're still cracking on that ending and you know, and quoting it and pulling up from different places. So that's why, you know, I consider the original really one of the best sci-fi films. It was really awesome. It was awesome.
Okay, I'll concede that to you. I agree with that. I think they kind of had that 1-2 punch with that ending, because yes, it's a social commentary on injustice, societal injustice, but it's also a commentary on, you know, should we have these weapons that cause mass destruction?
Yep,
and
yep.
So that iconic ending with the Statue of Liberty, I always think of that and go, Godzilla did it better. Like,
stop. Stop. Not even bring Godzilla into this discussion here.
Wow.
Okay, I was kidding. Yeah, no. Okay. Godzilla did not do it better, but hey, the rubber suits, rubber masks, what's the difference?
I really liked
if we're gonna go social commentary, I really like Escape from the Planet of the Apes, when the world blew up and they escaped and they went back in time to the original Earth and they I really loved that one because it still had a social commentary, but it was like the reverse of the first
exactly.
movie. And
like, you guys were smart enough to want to wear clothes, you guys were smart enough to have this kind of materialistic view on life. I liked that too.
And I can't go ahead.
Go on.
I was just saying, you can't help but just like feel the little subtle Well, it's not subtle. They did kind of beat you over the head with the racism thing and, you know, how people may view other people. And it just felt like spot on.
And of course, look, once again, who they got? They got Roddy McDowell, Ricardo Montalban, people. Yes. You rock him. Got Ricardo in there. I loved seeing him.
He was great.
But the other thing that was just hardcore about Escape from the Planet of the Apes, it is inescapable the 1970s. I mean, you cannot feel the 70s more than watching Escape from the Planet of the Apes. The outfits, they're taking them out on the town in the 70s.
That was my favorite part when they went out on the town. And then she had that lady modeling all the little dresses for her, and she picked the most 70s dress ever. And they just, it was, I don't, it is a very good movie. It should be in schools because the first one should be in schools because it started and you need that basis, but you can skip from one all to three and really have a good good idea what this movie is about. And they, you know, they were heavy handed a little bit with the message, but when you watch it, when I was watching it like last week or so, it's like, we don't get this type of thing in science fiction anymore. It's rare. It's very rare. And if they do try to do social commentary, it's so cheesy and it just, I don't know, it's uncomfortable. You can't feel it like you felt it in Escape from the Planet of the Apes and the 1968 one. So I miss this, yeah. And I want more of this. And the new movie didn't quite have it, but it had it in a way of, you know, we have Alzheimer's, which, you know, is ravaging a lot of our, you know, people here today. And it's a sad, sad disease to watch somebody die from. And so that, you know, it's not heavy handed on the racism, but, you know, I had my grandmother, she died from dementia. My grandfather had it. And it's just like, it's rough.
How far are we willing to go to prevent that from happening, to save ourselves from that kind of thing? You know, yes, that is it.
Well, you don't want that because it's like, because at first I didn't understand how Alzheimer's worked. And so they did a very good job in this movie explaining how it worked and how it could be treated and then how it wants to come back. And I didn't know it was educational because they kind of explained the mechanics of how Alzheimer's work in a little movie, two sentences. So,
and the science was there because to this day, right now, we're researching treating diseases with viruses. So, I thought that was cool. One thing that I thought was actually heavy handed about the recent movie or this current movie. Is the whole animal rights sort of treatment of animals and what they did. I thought that was really heavy-handed.
Like how?
Well, okay, so there was the circus orangutan that, like, knew sign language and was kind of this elder, you know, that... So there was that, but then Malfoy was so freaking mean in the movie.
Tom felt Malfoy.
Oh, Felty cannot catch a break in his roles, can he?
And he was such a doofus. What the heck? I mean, the way he died, I was so happy that he died because really, you didn't see that coming? He was pointing a hose at you. What is wrong with you?
Stupid.
So I know, but that sanctuary or whatever it was that...
the holding cell
sanctuary.
The ape prison
could it have possibly been, you know, more over the top, heavy handed?
So you're going on the opposite side of trying to create more hellish conditions for apes than actually exist.
Just the once I will go on the opposite side where I wanted to spare a little bit of suffering for somebody in a movie. Just the once.
just to forestall the apocalypse, which is coming at the end. That's the real payoff.
Did you like the new Battlestar Galactica? Because it was a lot of suffering in that, so I'm pretty sure.
I loved that one so much in every way. Yeah, I loved that. So that's the only heavy-handed thing that I really kind of just disliked about the movie. And then, but, you know, it was kind of tempered with with Caesar's character, and mm-hmm. he really and truly was a character in this movie, which also I thought, well, you know, that could have gone really wrong. I mean, it could have yeah. it could have been taking itself so seriously that it was a joke. And I didn't feel that Caesar was a joke. On the contrary, I thought that he was having very fast, obviously, because his intelligence was increasing exponentially. He had to deal with some very complex issues. When what's his name? The terrible actor, James Franco.
Even this movie made him seem like a good actor.
Wasn't that bad,
He was watchable.
He had some blue steel looks, though, and like he had the whole look anguished. He had that down. I'm gonna look anguished from this angle. I'm gonna look anguished from this other angle. And I just thought, please go back to Caesar.
That is so. I had totally forgot because I'm not a tremendous Franco fan. I gotta tell you. And before I saw this movie, that was something that was kind of giving me pause about going to see this. So I'm glad that you pointed that out because yes, he was not full Franco in this film. It was quite watchable.
Bizarro Franco.
Andy Serkis, I mean, a lot of that motion capture stuff was probably him on the set, you know, running around in his suit so people could get eye lines right and doing that. For him to be able to physically pull off, you know, this kind of stuff and then overlay all the computer stuff, it was impressive. I totally agree. He was the most interesting character in this movie in a non-gimmicky way. I mean, I'm talking about Caesar, you know, in a non-gimmicky way, though. I mean,
he didn't look fake at all. No, it was messing with my mind how real he looked. I mean, maybe there was if you want to nitpick, there's certain shots that maybe he didn't look all the way right. For the most part, Caesar looked great. I mean, there wasn't even Uncanny Valley, really. I mean, because when you looked in the eyes of these things, they looked piercing and real. And
well, this is a movie where it worked. It worked quite well to have that amount of emotion in a character that you know in reality is an animal. And yes, we know that animals can have emotions, but the CGI effects were really giving human attributes to those emotions. And I think that was well done. I usually am bothered by CGI effects. I'm not a big fan, but I liked this the way they dealt with that in the movie a lot. I felt like when he turned James Franco's character down, that was a real turning point in the movie for me. Like, man, he is coming into his own. I mean, obviously there were little highlights of it when he was in the redwoods on a leash and the dog was barking at him and he's making that connection where, hey, I'm on a leash as well. And this dog is just a pet.
Right. So sad.
It was sad, but it was, it touched on a deeper level of meaning for me. And I thought, well, okay, so here in this movie, he's basically turning away the only father he's ever known. In favor of raising these other, I don't know.
Apes,
kinfolk, whatever you want to call it. raising these
his
guys.
Kinfolk.
His cousins. Raising them all up to, you know, a more independent level. And yeah, I think they really did that well. And I was surprised that I liked the movies as much as I did. But I'm also surprised that the most favorite part was the credits. And I remember thinking, why didn't they go into this? Wow, cool.
Sick.
The credits were great. And one other thing, I mean, I loved all of the references to the original movies. Mm-hmm. They were just, you know, scattered very subtly throughout the whole film. But there was one that I just really, really liked. Right as the apes are escaping the lab and they're running across the rooftops, it was like a half a second. But there's just this one where the apes are on a rooftop and they've got the, you know, staffs or, you know, stakes or, you know, spears or whatever that they grabbed up from something, and the camera does this kind of shaky zoom. It like I said, it's a half a second, but why it was such a big deal is it was the style and the angle and the movement was pulled exactly from the original movie. And I think they were on a cliff or something. But it was just because it is a hammy movement that was so iconic, like in the 60s and 70s, you know, when they were trying to show, oh, action is happening now. It's heavy-handed now. It's heavy. But the way that they did it, it was sort of an optical tribute to the original. It was just
They had to
so
recreate
pretty.
That. They had to recreate so that to make that look real. Yes. It was... You know, and they're trying to recreate this very real thing that happens with a normal camera, and they did it digitally, and that's a labor of love right there.
Right.
Talking about, it was half a second. You know, they didn't have to do that. But so many times when you see, you know, prequels or sequels to really great movies, they'll put one, you know, half-hearted reference in there and leave it at that. You got to show some respect from where, you know, from where it came from, and to do it like that. I mean, all throughout, there was not one reference that they made in this movie that was ill-placed or too heavy-handed. They were all just so smooth and so well done and fun. It was great.
Yeah.
Even the fact that the Jerko neighbor was a pilot, I mean, that had its own place.
Perfect, you know? Yes. Yeah, McKay killing us all.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Well, this was exciting. I love this movie. I really like. I didn't expect it. Like, we've repeated it. So, any last thoughts? Cricket.
I think we said it.
Yeah.
I think we said it. You know.
We were in shock. There was a great movie this summer. Woohoo! That was good.
There were a couple of great movies this summer, but we won't go into it.
Okay. Well, Carl has like a couple of more stories to tell us about Dragon Con, and he hasn't even primed me, so I don't know anything about what he's gonna say. So spill it.
These have got no flow. There were just little things that was like, I know this is something I'm forgetting. I know this is something I'm forgetting. So I'm just going to throw them out. One of the fun things, I did go to the Farscape room.
How did you tell me that?
Well, listen, I told you it was so much happening. And listen, let me get it out. And you know, to me, it's so sad because I love Farscape. And this year, only the actress that plays Zan was there. All the rest of the crew, she was the only one that was there, and she was there for about 2-3 days. So I love her. She is so funny, and she is very smart, and she is a beautiful woman. And so she's you know, telling the stories of various things going on in the world of Farscape. But what was so funny is you don't realize it ahead of time, but she's a very naughty lady. She's very, very naughty, and she's talking about, well, okay, I can't get into all of the details, but I will simply say this. She says something that was inadvertently naughty, and you hear a guy off to the side kind of going like, and she looks at him, and it takes her a second. She goes, oh, you have a dirty mind. You have it. You know what? You deserve a spanking. Come up here. She spanked the guy. All right. She comes up there, and literally, I'm not joking, she hand on his butt, she's spanking the guy, and she goes, you know where I'm from, this is a form of punishment. And the guy's going, yeah. You know, he's loving it. Total time, he's having a great time. And she goes, you Americans are so straight. Does anyone else want to get spanked around here? And all these guys' hands go up. It was just,
including your own, you know, I'm sure.
I held it in. Oh, man. Zan is freaky. But it was she was a lot of fun. I like that. One of the other things I wanted to mention, I told you, I run with a lot of folks that are involved with, you know, film production and, you know, writing and effects and that kind of thing. So, you know, one of the best parts about being at Dragon Con, especially with friends that perhaps you haven't seen in person, you know, a lot of these people that you've met online or Facebook friends or Twitter folks, late night, there are parties right in the big hotel. Mm-hmm. Bunch of us got together and We were up in a hotel room just telling stories about things that had happened to us on our film sets and sort of the, you know, the projects that we were working on and just, you know, going around the room to see what's happening. How you doing? What's happening? How you doing? One of the guys that I know is really big on props started telling me, he goes, oh man, you know, I'm really getting into screenplay writing. And I was partnering with this guy on a project and something happened. And I wasn't able to work with him on it, but his project went on to be a major film. He said, I just can't believe I didn't get a chance to contribute to this more. I said, really? He said, oh yeah, you know, I told you I've been really interested in screenplay writing. And Carl, I know you're into that kind of stuff, but I think I missed my chance here. I said, well, what project was it that he was working on? He said, there's this new film coming out called Apollo 18. And I'm looking at him because you all know. I'm going, oh my, you really missed out there.
Yo! Yes, so you did.
I'm looking at him because he is a friend. I did not say a word. I did not say a word. And so when Kat contacts me last week going, oh boy, you know, Stephanie's really excited about talking about Apollo 8. I'm like, oh geez, it's coming back. It's coming back. I am not going to do this.
Something about Apollo 18. And she's like, well, if you do it, I want in. And so that's the only reason I saw it. And then...
Oh, it comes out now.
So, I'm so sorry. My buddy missed out on a once in a lifetime opportunity there to be strongly associated with Apollo 18. But
yeah, no, he didn't. It was a favor.
So Stephanie, I was that close to greatness for you there. You see, I was just across so.
The just you wait. It's going to be Rise of the Planet of the Moon Crabs pretty soon. Mm-hmm. That's the next thing that's going to happen.
Geez.
It'll be Apollo 19. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, I hope not. I'm not. What you say? Not doing it.
I got to say, I definitely preferred Rise of the Planet of the Apes to Apollo 18, but still good movies.
That's one out of the limb you there. That's really a bold statement you're making. Controversial, I'm sure.
Well, you know, I march to the beat of my own drummer. What can I say? That drummer is also evil, just like me. So.
Oh, God. have any of you guys been hearing the crazy... the angry tweets and Facebook posts about the new Star Wars Blu-ray.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And...
But is Han not shooting first anymore? What did they do?
No, they're overdubbing the originals, the 4, 5, and 6. They're they're adding new dialogue to it, the Blu-ray version.
Wait a minute. Do you mean like
where were you
doing
under a rock?
I know.
No, seriously. I'm about done with the original Star Wars. So anything that came out, I really wasn't paying a lot of attention to. But are you saying they're adding new lines, or they're just cleaned up the audio? What do you mean there?
They're adding stuff like no, and that's all I really know.
So important to the plot.
Yeah, I think they added some sort of screech somewhere. I'm not really sure. I haven't seen it. I haven't bought the DVD, Blu-ray. And Han is still shooting second.
What?
But it's faster this time.
Oh, that doesn't help. Oh, no. What is that?
I know. They should just leave it alone.
I don't know why he did. I'm not buying it.
Okay. I still have my copies on VHS. I'm so glad I kept them though, because I was really pissed off when he added creatures to, you know, right before the prequels came out, the new and improved Star Wars trilogy came out in the theaters. And so he added like creatures to it and all that. But a significant change was the like Ewok party scene in Return of the Jedi at the end with that cute little Yanni song or whatever it was. Oh no, they They changed it and they put in a Yanni song. That's right.
Right, right. So it wasn't that little xylophone jam that was from the original one.
No, I was so God. Mad.
I still get really upset at the replacement of Anakin at the end of Return.
Yeah.
That really ignites my fury.
I know. Well, so if you have that big of a plot hole in your story, then that's your bad and you just have to live with it. I don't get why he gets to revise his work like that.
Who does that? Does anybody else do this?
Probably, but Star Wars is so, I don't know, ubiquitous. You can't do that.
Obviously, he can't.
Well,
technically, it is possible, but in the will of humanity, it's a crime.
Yeah, it is a crime.
Yeah. You go back and change everything that you love about the movie. Why would you do that? I don't know.
Who knows?
I think I'm the glad first half of Wizard of the Oz should have been 3D. Let's go with that.
I'm gonna insert a no.
At least it's just a no. That's not bad. I mean, I thought you guys were talking about whole, you know.
I don't know all of it because I've kind of been ignoring it because I'm not going to buy the Blu-ray because I don't think he should get any more of my money. I'm tired of it. I'm done.
How many copies do you own? How many copies have just you had to buy?
Just DVD. I didn't have the VHS. I'm too young for that. And so. What? Why are you
she
laughing?
She says in Perfect Valley Girl. I was like, you know, like 2 in the 80s for real.
And so, yeah, no, I don't have the VHS, but I have the recent DVD, whatever. And
It's funny that you mentioned that because Return of the Jedi came out when I was about 5 or 6. So I love the Ewoks. But, I mean, and I obviously don't care for Jar Jar Binks because I was so much older when I saw that. And a lot of people on my friends have said, hey, I hate to break it to you, but the Ewoks are also as annoying as Jar Jar Binks.
They are not as annoying. They are not as annoying as Jar Jar.
Well, guys, we're going to wrap it up, and this is our show. We'd love your feedback. Give us a call at 773-336-2686. Go to our website. Leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com. We're on Facebook. Like us. We're on Twitter. Tweet us at scifipartyline. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
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 Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape! You did it. You cut up his brain, you bloody baboon! You maniacs! You blew it up! Oh, damn you! God damn you all to hell!
End of line.